Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Core Intuition. Double down on that.
Well, Manton, we talked a little bit last week about our products and trying to get ourselves back on the track of shipping updates, getting stuff out the door. And I have sort of been aided in this pursuit by junk getting busted and me having to fix it. So there's something to be said for things changing that are out of your control, compelling you to ship an update. I had to make a fix for Fast Scripts because it uses a status bar menu icon that starting in Yosemite looks terrible under dark mode, where mm-hmm. Turns the menu bar black, and my menu icon stayed black. So, that's not good. Had to fix that. Shipped an update, but it sort of got me like whenever I ship an update, I sort of start looking at other stuff like, oh yeah, that's something I really wanted to fix. And then, inevitably get a couple of things in there.
Yeah.
And then I had a similar thing happen with Black Ink, my crossword app, which, oh man, I hate to speak ill of my apps, Manton, but I love this app, but it's just, I acquired this app, I guess now, almost as long ago. Well, actually it was
longer
I think,
than Mars
Edit. Just by a couple months longer than Mars Edit. So it's been, 7 years.
Well,
and from the day that I acquired it, I had this instinct that there was something wrong with it. And that instinct was the dependency on third parties for puzzles, right? Mm-hmm. And at that time, there were probably like 10 different puzzles that shipped as like part of the sort of proposition with Black Ink is it's two products. It's like a best of class solving app for crossword puzzle files. So you open a crossword puzzle file, and it makes it nice to enter the answers to the clues and solve the puzzle. The other aspect of it is that it is a puzzle downloader, and for years, part of the attraction was you could open it up and it would present you with this list of like 10 different puzzle sources, and you pick one and it would download the puzzle from that source. And it's just from that, like I said, from the day that I acquired it, I was like, oh, this is not going to be good if I ever run out of puzzle sources, because it's like then you've got, it's not like an app that's like an image editor where an infinite number of people can make an infinite number of their own content. And it's special that way. It's more like an ebooks platform where I don't have any control over the ebooks, and I don't really feel up to the job of like taking charge of that problem. Like I could have 7 years ago said, you know what this really needs is for me to become the crossword puzzle interchange of the internet. Mm-hmm. And then if I would have done that 7 years ago and become like the standard, like central place for that, maybe I wouldn't have this problem. But anyway, getting back to the point,
you'd have a whole new set of problems.
Yeah. A whole new set of problems. The problem way back then was that every once in a while a puzzle provider would stop making their puzzles available for free on the web. And it's sort of understandable. Like that was another funny smell about this app was like, okay, I like that they're making all these puzzles available for free and then my customers can just download them. But something does smell a little bit funny about this as a long-term solution, because why would they want to keep giving away their puzzles for free? Mm-hmm. Anyway, what would happen is occasionally some puzzle maker would say, nah, we're not doing that anymore. Or they just stop making the puzzle because, they weren't making money anyway. And then all of my customers would start emailing me saying, what have you done? You sold me this crossword editor and it said it would work with the Houston Chronicle and now it doesn't even download the Houston Chronicle.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh geez, it's the positioning of the app was wrong, right? So now it's gotten worse and worse. So at that time I had to actually go and make updates to the app whenever that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point I got smart, probably after the Mac App Store, I got smart and changed it so it downloads its puzzle source list, refreshes it all the time.
Right.
So now somebody goes, "You jerk, you just ruined my app," and you and I just, well, the most I can do at least is I can zap that puzzle source from the list. Mm-hmm. At least then immediately they don't even have the option of thinking that they can download it. But now I have this problem where I'm getting to the point where it's going to be like no puzzles in the list, and you open the app and it says, "Here are no puzzles for you to choose from." Mm-hmm. But one of the ways I've like gone after this problem is to start supporting paid puzzles. Well, I don't get any money, but I allow people to log in to their accounts for a couple different paid puzzles, the New York Times included. And I guess this long roundabout way of talking about this is that I added that support in the previous release to Black Ink. And then all of a sudden, while I'm working on all this other stuff, I get email that says, "I can't log into my New York Times." Mm-hmm. And I had to make a bug fix update. So this is how it's been going lately for me. Other people or other entities have been making it so that I ship software. And maybe that's the way it needs to be. But now I'm working on Mars Edit. And again, similarly, actually, I had a couple people. Because, you know, I'm often like fixing these little bugs and then I think, well, that's a nice little bug, but it's not enough to ship an update. And then every once in a while, somebody comes in with something where it makes me feel embarrassed enough that I want to ship the update right away. And then that's when all those little bugs go, bug fixes go out with the bigger bug fix. So.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you're once you're in the groove of doing, you know, updates and changes, it's nice to just get you finish a few things all at once.
Yeah.
Because it's like the problem a lot of times is just starting or just getting the app ready to ship.
And yep.
Once you get through that hurdle, it's like, only a few lines of code here or there to take care of these other problems.
Yeah. And it's sort of, that sort of reminds me what I was getting at towards the end of last week's show. Like, Banton, we have the power. We just have to sit down and do the work.
Yeah.
And it's true that it's sort of like, and it also sort of relates back to the whole, like, well, you get in a rut about not blogging and you think, well, I don't know, I gotta, like, you know, the depending on how far into the rut you are or how much you've never even like attempted to blog, there's more obstacles to get back into it, right? Because like, if you never attempted to blog, you say, oh, I don't know, I gotta figure out what blogging is. And then I gotta figure out which blog system to use. And then I gotta figure out what I want to write about. And then I got to make a design and then I got to buy Mars Edit like 100 times. And then, you know, then I got to actually remind myself to blog every once in a while. And then I got to like, you know, feel good about myself to think that anybody cares what I say. But then you get in the groove of it and you're like, you know what? This is just what I do. I have a thought and it's too long for Twitter or app.net. So I write a blog post, and it's similar, I think, with shipping software, is you get to this point where it's like, you know what, I've automated this system enough so that when I make a bug fix, I can go from a bug fix to a shipping product pretty effortlessly. And that's similarly different from people who've never shipped software, right? Like we've talked about this before, where it's like, people who are new to shipping their own apps, I always tell them, just get yourself to ship 1.0 release of anything.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be working on a 1.0 of an app, but more importantly, you're working on 1.0 of your shipping apparatus. And the shipping apparatus sort of gets a little rusty if you don't use it very frequently. And mine got a little rusty. So I feel good now. I feel like I put a little oil on the chain.
Yeah.
And I'm turning the crank and software's coming out. And next step, question, then $.
Profit. Yeah. I mean, the blogging is definitely one of those things. Like, if you can do it every day, especially, it's like, oh, it seems almost effortless. Of course, it's not. You spend a lot of time usually writing these posts, unless they're very short. But if you can get into that routine, it really helps. And it kind of makes me jealous in some ways of people that have a routine like that for software, where they ship on a schedule, no matter what, like every, you know, it's common internally, like beta testing or internally at companies, whatever, to do like, well, to do nightly builds for some people, or at least like weekly or something like that. No matter what, you know, I'm shipping out a beta every week. But even public facing software is kind of going that direction in some cases, where it's like, I noticed Facebook was an example. It was like, we ship a new version of our app every month, no matter what. And that's really fascinating to me. It's like, I've never approached software like that, but I can see how if you know you're doing this couple 2 week sprints or whatever in your little process, and at the end of it, you ship to customers. I mean, I can see the appeal of that because you're in this routine and you've got to get stuff done.
Yeah, that's, I feel like, it's funny, Manton, this is going to sound like I'm talking to my therapist now, because sometimes I have a conversation like this with him where it's, the struggle between the like aspect of me that wants to be like highly, controlled and like wants to be like regimented, and the part that's like just totally in defiance of that, and the part that just says, you know what, I ship software when I want to,
right?
And I ship software when it feels right. I don't do this like arbitrary ship software just because the man says to ship software.
Well, yeah, because that's the whole point of working for yourself, right? Is you don't you can ship software every day, every year. I mean, you don't you ship it when it's ready and you have control over it. You don't have to overthink and have a committee around which feature is going to make it into Black Ink. You don't need a meeting to discuss whether you're going to add New York Times password support or whatever.
Right. But then when that weird, like I was saying, when that unexpected element of regimentation comes, i.e. in the form of something that makes me feel embarrassed, or, that there's an urgency to ship something, watch that software fly.
Yeah.
Like, I could maybe use a little bit more of that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Could use a little bit more, like, daddy doesn't get to, eat unless, software ships on Friday.
Yeah, there's something to be said to just force yourself to stick to some kind of routine, or just at least to remind yourself that, the money's not going to, I'm not going to get a sales spike if I just sit on this app and do nothing.
Yeah, unless you get one of those weird lucky things where, like, we were talking about before, actually, when we were going deep on the on like Unread and stuff, right? We were talking about, like, well, you're always sort of sitting on the lottery ticket, which is like, Google Reader goes out of business and you're the only game in town,
right?
That still happens to do that. But you're right; it's kind of like that adage about making your own luck. It's like, you can get lucky, or you can just like keep doing things that are likely to make you succeed.
Yeah.
Probably doing both is best, having your lottery tickets in the form of these apps that, the truth is, like, as you know, Manton, and most of our listeners know, I don't spend an equal amount of time on all of my apps. So, for example, FastScripts is mostly just like a labor of love. I never, maybe when I was young and naive, younger and naive-er, maybe I thought FastScripts was going to be someday like a big hit and I was going to make a lot of money from it. But that dream has long since passed. But that didn't stop me from having a weird $13,000 sale of FastScripts licenses several years ago.
Awesome.
It went from like, I'm making $100 a month off of this app to I sold $13,000 worth of this app to I'm making $100 worth of this app.
Wow.
And that's the lottery ticket aspect, which I kind of like,
Yeah. Luck. A lot of it is just being in the right position to know when. I had a blog post about this actually just like a month ago or recently, because Gus Mueller had pointed to a blog post from Paul Kim's kind of chain of blog posts about being indie. And yeah, a lot of times it's just working every day to get to a position where when something lucky happens, you are in the position to double down on that opportunity and make it work. And the hard part is not randomly waiting for luck, but when opportunities present themselves, knowing which ones to skip and which ones to say, I'm all in on this. And
right.
I'm lucky, but I'm also in the right position to be all in and to do the right thing. And I'm sure there's mistakes you could have made that you didn't make that would have meant that sale didn't happen, right?
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, for instance, I could have said, oh, you want to buy a site license? Cool. My site license price is just twice the normal single user price. Yeah, I see some. I see some people make this mistake.
Well, and then you made $200 a month or whatever.
Right. Well, or like, you know, fast scripts at the time cost $15 a license, mm-hmm. and I've seen people who are like, you know, fast scripts $15 per person, $20 per family, $100 per site.
Yeah.
You know?
Even if you're like, a huge company.
Right. And so these people came to me and they were like, we need, I think it was like, we need 1,200 employees to be able to use this app.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, I don't know how to do this. Mm-hmm. But the aspect of it that was, there was the luck of the people coming to me. And then there was, like you say, there was the actually capitalizing on that aspect that gave me the initiative to say, how about, here was my logic when I did it. I said something, maybe it was 1500 was the number of people they wanted. Cause I remember I thought, so I said something like, well, if I sold you 1500 individual licenses, that would be $15,000. So how about if I give you a discount and make it 13,000?
That's awesome. That is great. I need to hire you to do my sales.
I'm not always that plucky. But I was happy with that outcome. Very happy. And afterwards, I thought, maybe I should just get into the business of selling site licenses. Be like one of those people like Joel Spolsky wrote about, where you fly out and you spend $2,000 to make a sale.
You're an enterprise developer.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, those opportunities are great. That was certainly an extreme case, but there's other stuff. And I, you know, I'm seeing right now in my stuff some of the same thing you're talking about with, you know, APIs changing or whatever that present an opportunity to do something that's a lot better or that has a benefit for the app. The one I've been looking at lately is finally, you know, listeners will be like, oh my gosh, you're months behind on this, Manton. But the one I've been looking at lately is iOS 8 extensions, finally. And I had this in the back of my head. There's a lot of stuff I wanted to do. But the thing that finally got me to actually write one is that Twitterific supports sharing of tweets now. And this is something I hoped would happen, but I wasn't sure when or which apps would support it. So previously, you know, every Twitter app has some slightly different sharing thing. Usually you can click on a link and say, like, send an Instapaper or something like that. But until now, as far as I know, no app had the ability to basically tap and hold on a tweet and then open up the normal system sharing. So what that allows me to do, for example, is have an extension for Tweet Library where you tap and hold in Twitterific, you say Tweet Library, and then within Twitterific, it pops up and can, like, you can add the tweet to a Tweet Library collection. You know, you could sync it, or maybe. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do directly inside another Twitter app, which I haven't shipped this yet. I have a lot of work to do on it still, but it's the kind of thing that it could be nothing. It could be something that my users really like, or it could be a complete reimagining of what the app does. Because the app has always had this problem of it does all this archiving and search stuff that no one else does, but it also is a full Twitter app. And that's confusing, and most people don't want it to be a full Twitter app, even though some people use it like that. So it's one of those opportunities. Like, I haven't decided if it's huge or it's just kind of a nice thing for my users, but it's something. You know, something's there.
Yeah, it's great when the circumstances of, you know, changes in the operating system actually kind of give you a freebie, right? Like, it's it's still, it's work, obviously, for you to do, but sometimes it's like, oh, I just add this thing and all my customers say, that's nice. Daniel just did a lot of work to add a new feature. But sometimes Apple, you know, to their credit, sometimes what they're giving us really makes some of that new stuff easy. And it's just like, okay, being part of the ecosystem, you know, like full screen mode, for instance, on the Mac. I'm still not happy with the way I handle it, but the fact that Apple, like, standardized it and made it easy for me to just say, yes, my app can go full screen. I was like, okay, well, that was the motivation I needed to add this feature that people had been asking for forever. And now you're going to have this feature that probably a lot of people wanted, but like you said, it wasn't possible for you to literally tap into it, and it would have been extremely daunting to just, like, try to mimic it, right? I guess some of the stuff you can't even mimic. You just
Some of it's impossible. And it's like some of it, would, like, for the Twitter apps, without, you know, the iOS 8 stuff, it would be me, you know, emailing all the Twitter developers, trying to coordinate some, I don't know, some hacky URL scheme API to make apps work together, or expand, you know, the tweet marker API, which I came up with, to do some other things. And, you know, I've thought of all that stuff, but I've kind of been down that road with tweet marker already. And
right.
I don't think I can do that again. I think that was like a once in a Twitter era opportunity or something. I don't know.
You mean you think you're not going to invest in more engineering solutions for a platform you don't use?
I know. And of course, here I am, you know, adding new features to Tweet Library. But the fact is, Tweet Library, you know, people still buy it. They like it. I like it. Even though I don't post to Twitter, I think it's kind of a special app. So, yeah, you can add features, whatever. It, you know, as long as people are buying it, I'm going to keep supporting it. So then you said, you know, sometimes Apple gives you a freebie, you have something you can take advantage of in the API. And of course, yeah, sometimes they do that and they take it away. There's been a little controversy lately around Today extensions, which, you know, there's a handful of different kinds of extensions. In Tweet Library, I was talking about the share extensions. But Today extensions, you know, you pull down on the Notification Center or whatever it's called, and you can have different apps in there. And people are really taking advantage of this. There's an app called Launcher that's doing things in there. PCalp had a whole calculator thing in there. And you've been keeping up with this. I've been actually barely keeping up with this for some reason. My news seems to be delayed slightly. But the gist of it is, they approved a bunch of apps, and then they started pulling apps, and then they started to threaten, you know, you got to change this or your app is going to be pulled in a couple weeks. By the time we're recording now, I think it's almost come full circle now, where there was enough sort of negative pushback that at least some of these apps, like PCalc, is going to stay in the store.
Yeah. James Thompson, our longtime old Mac I still think of him as a Mac developer, because he's one of these guys that's been around forever.
Yep.
And definitely started as a Mac developer way back, you know, decades ago with the rest of us old timers. You know what's funny, Manton? I just said decades ago, like, metaphorically, but it's actually literally true. I've actually been developing Mac software for more than 20 years. So,
wow.
Decades ago. Now, James has been an iOS developer almost exclusively since, it turns out, his probably decades-old app, PCalc, was a perfect fit for, you know, an iPhone in particular, I think, but probably iPad too. And he's just been killing it lately with updates, and just, like, it seems like I'm not too tuned into the product, because I don't actually think I need a calculator, but I probably do. But I really respect James's, you know, seizing on this opportunity. And it seems like anybody who thinks about, like, what is a calculator for iOS, they think of James's PCalc. And he embraced, like you said, this new ability to put stuff on the Today screen and shipped it. And everyone was happy celebrating it. And he's like, yes, taking a bow. And then he gets a call from Apple that says, one of these dreaded calls. These are like the worst ones, Manton, because you like to think once you get the approval and you're in the App Store and you're making money and people are celebrating you. And in James's case, Apple is celebrating you as like a, I forget what the classification was, but it was like best, you know, something or other of the app, best of the App Store or something like that. Mm-hmm. Right. And they're saying, this is an example of what you should be doing. And then the other hand of Apple is saying, surprise, you know, that app you've been selling and taking a bow for the past several days or weeks, you need to take out this key feature that everybody's celebrating, which is the ability to calculate. Remember, folks, it's a calculator. The ability to calculate in the UI that appears in the Today screen. Just how crushing is that? You know, Manton, I'm still psychologically so afraid of App Store, the process, that I get a little adrenaline shot whenever I see a note in my inbox from App Store review, right? And it happens even when, you know, like if you submit something, it says like your app is waiting for review. And that's like the most innocuous one you can get because it's completely automated and it's all good news. It means you're like on track. You're going to get reviewed someday, hopefully. And I still get a little adrenaline shot like, oh no, what happened?
Right.
And then you get finally to the point where they say, okay, you've been waiting a week. Okay, your app is in review. And then they're like, oh, okay, what's going to happen? There's probably going to be a decision. Maybe it's going to be in a couple hours. Maybe it's going to be in a couple days. And then a couple hours or days pass and they say, you are. And then if you're lucky, they say you are ready for sale. And you're like, oh, yes, I'm ready for sale. And you don't think a week later you're going to get a call that says, remember when we said you were ready for sale? Actually, you need to take your app off of the app store unless you dramatically change it right in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Terrible. And that's the kind of call that James got.
And the worst thing, too, is like you said, one side of Apple is all excited about your app, and then the other side calls you and says, yeah, this isn't going to work. And I didn't realize this until recently that the folks that feature apps in the App Store are not the same people that review apps. So, like, you could be featured and then pulled from the store, like, all in the same day, which is crazy mixed messages. And I know it's happened with some of these Today extensions. And it's ridiculous. I mean, talk about the roller coaster ride is drive developers insane.
It should set off a red flag within Apple when software is of such obvious quality that their editorial teams feature it. It should set off a red flag that they are choosing at the same time to forbid such software, right? Mm-hmm. Like, whatever the reasons are for forbidding software, whether it's like taste, whether it's like they feel that it endangers the user, I think as a rule, those boundaries should be kind of obvious enough and common sense enough that the editorial reviewers kind of know where that border is too. Like, I don't think you're going to see the editorial team celebrating like, you know, the best porn app on iOS, right? They know, they get it, right? Yeah. That's not. And so when the editorial team diligently says, this is awesome, I can do calculator stuff in my Today view, maybe that's a sign that the review team needs to catch up to reality, right? If they're in the, and in this case, to their credit, in this particular case, that does seem to be what happened. It seems like the hoopla surrounding this rejection, lucky for James, I think he has a network of friends and fans on the web that made hay about this. They were like, what? You know, and it's like, it's because it's not something like porn. It's I want to do math on my computer, on my iPhone.
Well, and all the most of these apps, you know, unlike porn, they were not. The guidelines said they were fine, or didn't say they weren't fine. Right? There was nothing in those original iOS 8 guidelines that said you can't do crazy things in a Today widget, as far as I know.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't say I didn't look carefully at that, but I did remember them. The way that they rejected James, I believe they said no apps can do, quote, calculations. I think that's what they said.
Yeah, but that wasn't in the original.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's like it's one of those changing rules kind of things. So of course, the part of Apple that wants to highlight great developer apps is going to feature these apps because they're really useful, and there's nothing in the rules that says you can't do them. And then, you know, behind the scenes over a few weeks, there starts to be, someone at Apple's like, this is going too far, and they have to redraw the line or whatever. My concern is, so I think it has a mostly happy ending for James and Peacock, but my concern is that, so this is how things work on the internet, right? Everyone's outraged, they get upset, and then some big company changes their mind a little bit, and then everyone says, okay, everything's cool again. Problem is not everything is cool again. Right now, as far as I know, there are still a bunch of these apps that have been pulled that will not go back to the store. Like the launcher one I mentioned, which I know Mac Stories has written about it, and I believe that's still out of the store. And there's a couple others, I think, that fall into that category, the Today widgets that Apple pulled, and they're not coming back. So that's why I get frustrated with this kind of stuff sometimes. It's like you have a real high-profile case that has a happy ending, but then we forget about all the rest of the folks that had a bad ending because they didn't have the, you know, they didn't complain loud enough or they didn't have as big an audience to get traction inside of Apple.
Right. I always worry when like you, I think you and I, Manton, I think are philosophically aligned in that we sort of like to look out for the quote unquote little guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
And part of that is coming from being and still remaining to be in the big scheme of things, little guys. But I don't like solutions that grease the squeaky wheel only because the squeaky wheel is this, you know, big attention-getting entity. And I don't mean to call you that, James, but, you know, the fact is you got a lot of attention. James got a lot of attention for pCalc, rightly so, because it's a popular app and it has a very innocuous-seeming proposition. But I thought that was one of the first things I thought upon seeing all of the you know, outrage about this rejection was, I hope Apple fixes this, but I hope Apple, in general, I would like to think that when Apple gets into a situation like this where they end up backtracking on a, let's just call it a poor choice, because if it wasn't a poor choice, I don't think they would backtrack on it. So Apple backtracks on a poor choice. And I always think, I hope they're doing something systematically to lessen the chances of this happening again, you know. And you and I know, Manton, that it's hard to always think systematically. Like, you and I fix a bug in one of our apps. Sometimes we just fix the bug and ship it. Sometimes we don't say, okay, I fixed the bug, now how do I prevent this from ever happening again?
Right.
And you'd like to think that when Apple fixes a bug in its, you know, App Store approval process, that they say, okay, well, we fixed this for James Thompson, who's famous pCalc calculator was banned, but have we fixed it for, you know, the 17-year-old high school student who's just shipping her first, you know, recipe app that shows recipe calculations in the Today screen? And if we aren't fixing it for her, who's going to be like the bullhorn shouting her situation around the internet, you know?
Yep.
And the fact is, there's a lot of people who fall into that camp where they're not being heard because they don't have an app that's already popular. They don't have a social network on the web that's ready to shout for them. And in some cases, you know, the reason for the rejection is more nuanced. You know, I meant to say this actually earlier when I said, well, I think that the editorial reviewers kind of should they have some common sense about what is or isn't good. That said, of course, there could be edge cases where, you know, let's say somebody, let's say a man on the editorial review board is a little like not tuned into something about an app that actually makes it like sexist or something, right? And then he is in power, I guess, to say this is like the app of the week or something. And then somebody says, whoa, hold on, this app's getting rejected because it's degrading to women or something. Mm-hmm. That's a situation where you can say, okay, well, it makes sense. They sometimes review does have to come in and like strike down what editorial says.
Yeah, the thing that's weird about this case is, well, first of all, to take a quick step back, I thought Apple was really on a roll with like developer friendly, like their attitude coming out of WWDC. We've got a new language for you. We've got these new iOS 8 extensions. Like, you know, we're going to be more transparent. You know, forget about the NDA. Like, I really thought that they were on the right track, you know, and Tim Cook even saying, I think in some cases, yes, we're going to be more open about things. They have a blog, right?
Right.
For Swift, at least. So I really was, you know, excited about the direction. And yeah, these little blips in that, or even worse than that, just it's frustrating. But also it's weird to me, this particular example, because so they have this API, right? You can do today widgets. If they didn't want people to do cool stuff in it, they shouldn't have made an API that allowed you to do, you know, they should have just had like, oh, just return a UI image and you can have a static like preview of your content in the today widget or something. No, like these are full interact. You could do stuff in these.
Right.
And so they, I find it very difficult to believe that they were not expecting that people would actually use that API to do useful stuff. And once you have an API like that and it's open and it's great, you know, the can of worms or whatever is open, you can't go back and try to lock that down. I think it's inevitable that people are going to be able to do whatever they want more or less with this. And it's going to be up to users. Yeah, if users install 20 stupid today widgets and it's a clutter and it's a mess and it makes the today screen slower and it hurts battery life or whatever, that's on the user. Like the, I don't think Apple can completely control what's happening with this in the long run.
That's interesting because I guess you're right. Like Apple has sort of historically with the phone kept the user from doing much that can degrade the like battery life, for instance. And but it is true that, you know, they can affect it. Some of these apps that have background location, you know, behaviors, they do run the battery down faster than if you weren't using those apps, right?
Yeah.
So I guess that's similar in that respect. That's similar. You have to say at some point, like, I think what Apple can do, what's in Apple's power, is to make it so, for instance, like, well, if you can't see it on the today screen, then it doesn't need to be taking any power or whatever, you know, like.
Seems like they're efficient about that because it doesn't, like when I pull it down, it doesn't, it seems to refresh stuff. Like I don't get the feeling. I haven't built one of these, but I don't get the feeling that it's super inefficient with just running stuff in the background all the time.
Right. Well, you know, Apple lets people junk up their computers. Just look at my desktop on my Mac. It's like the fact that it, you know, the fact that it even has like a cleanup option in the Finder respects the fact that I am going to be junky with my stuff. And there is a place for letting people be junky and fill up their today screen with a bunch of junk if they want to. I fill up my dock with a bunch of junk. And I think it's okay. I think there is a level at which Apple should give people the control over, you know, what they want their computing environment to be. And I think that's a key point, that some people want to do calculator work in their today view. I guess there's one of the outstanding questions here is really just like, what basis does Apple's review board make so many of these decisions on? You know, are they, I must imagine them sitting around in a room saying like, imagine there's like a smaller group of people who's saying like, this is what we're going to tell our reviewers is like the standard for today widgets. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously you can't do calculations. And somebody else is like, well, why not? Like, what's wrong with doing a calculation? And then they say, well, because X, Y, Z. And then everyone in the room goes, oh yeah, you're right. And then they approve. They say that's, yeah. So what is that X, Y, Z? Maybe it's like, well, because, and this would be like, does Apple's calculator let you do? I think that maybe that's it. Like, well, because it competes with Apple's calculator. and that would be one of those like misguided reasons that they've used before, right? And they say like, you can't do that because.
Yeah, I don't really see the, maybe I haven't looked at this. I said at the beginning, I haven't followed this as closely as maybe I should, just because I think it would make me angry trying to avoid it. But I don't see the line. I don't see where, I don't really see the difference between a lot of these today extensions. Like you say, because it does a calculation, but there are other today extensions that have been pulled that don't do calculations, that just do other sort of stuff. And I don't see where Apple has drawn the line between what is allowed and what isn't. You know, like another example of it, I've tried several today extensions, but I only have a couple in there. I really think it's a trap to like have too much in there just from a usability standpoint. But one that I did try recently was Fantastical's, and they have a whole calendar thing in there, right? Like not only can you view like today's agenda, but you can click through your months and click on days. Like it's totally interactive. Like that's okay, I guess. But like what's the difference between that and a calculator? I just don't see where Apple's drawing this line. And I think going forward, that line is going to be impossible to draw. It just, there's going to be too many different types of today widgets.
Right. I think that the constraints of the UI are enough of a, you know, they set the standard well enough, more than most fine-tuned, persnickety review guidelines could. It's like, well, what can you do in this little snippet of space that you get on the user's scrolling, you know, locked home page? And if you can do something useful with calculation, great. If you can do a little micro calendar management app in there, great. I'm not going to write a blog editor for the Today View, famous last words.
Are right? You sure? Could be pretty great. Swipe down, type something in, hit post.
Oh boy. Well, so I got to run, Manton. I got to get this blog editor for the Today widget thing done.
That's one of those opportunities. It's time to jump on that. Maybe not, but
maybe if somebody offers me $13,000 for it.
Yeah. That'll work.
I could use another one of those windfalls.
You need to get one of those site licenses, you know, at regular intervals. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck with your crazy Today widget ideas, or more realistically, working on your existing apps, Mars Edit. Yep. And I've got a bunch of stuff to do as well. It was great talking to you this week. Folks, check out the jobs board if you haven't lately. We have some new posts on there, new job listings are coming in. There's some really interesting stuff in there.
Yeah, it's really coming in an intriguingly increasing manner. We got stuff listed there that's you can work anywhere. So that's always interesting to people, especially if they're located places where there aren't a lot of tech jobs, but they would like to have a great one. And then we got jobs in there from Virginia, Pennsylvania, New York, California. Admittedly, that all sounds a little America-based, United States-based, but people outside of the U.S., take a look at that anywhere job. It might be just the ticket for you.
That anywhere one in the description, too, I think it says prefer like 5 hours from GMT. So that's not just the U.S. That might be perfect for folks in the U.K. or where not.
And of course, if you are out there listening to this and you happen to work at a company that is outside the U.S., of course, remember that your company is welcome to list jobs on Core Intuition Job Board. It is a global job board, and many people who listen to this show and who visit the job board are, in fact, from around the world. So take advantage of that. Don't let this look. Don't make it look like all the jobs are in the U.S. because we know it's not true. I guess on that note, though, Manton, I will get back to work. You will get back to work. Folks who are looking to get back to work, of course, like we said, go to the job board, and we will chat again next week.
All right. See you next week.